This is audiobook in half an hour parts in MP3 of the classic study book on the higher realms. The Mental Body by Arthur E. Powell. First published in 1927 by the Theosophical Society. Introduction. This book is the third of the series dealing with man's bodies, its two predecessors having been the etheric body and the astral body. In all three, identically the same method has been followed. Some 40 volumes, mostly from the pens of Annie Besant and C.W. Leadbeater, recognized today as the authorities par excellence on the ancient wisdom in its guise of modern theosophy, have been carefully searched for data connected with the mental body. Those data have been classified, arranged and presented to the student in a form as coherent and sequential as the labors of the compiler have been able to make it. Throughout this series, no attempt has been made to prove, or even to justify, the statements made, except insofar as their own internal evidence and reasonability justify them. The bona fides of these veteran investigators and teachers being unquestionable, the results of their investigations and their teachings are here set out, without evasion or reservation of any kind, so far as possible in their own words, modified and abridged only where necessary to suit the requirements of an orderly and logical presentation of the subject matter. The question of proof is an entirely separate issue, and one, moreover, of vast dimensions. To have attempted to argue or prove the statements made would have defeated the primary object of these books, which is to lay before the serious student a condensed synthesis, within reasonable compass, of the teachings from the sources named regarding the bodies of man and the planes or worlds to which these belong. Those who desire proofs must search for them elsewhere. The fact that, after some 2.5 years of intensive study of the writings of the two authors named, no discrepancies or contradictions, beyond 12, literally, 2 or 3 of trifling moment, have been discovered, constitutes a striking testimonial to the faithfulness in detail of the investigators, and to the coherence of the theosophical system. As in the two preceding volumes, marginal references have been given in order that the student may, if he wish, verify for himself any statement made at the original sources. The indices of the series of three books, together with the marginal references, thus virtually constitute in themselves a fairly complete index to everything dealing with the etheric, astral, and lower mental worlds in the writings of Annie Besant and C.W. Leadbeater. It is hoped that there will be added to the series in due time a fourth volume, on the causal body. As already mentioned, by far the greater part of the material presented in this book has been obtained directly from the writings of Dr. Besant and Bishop Leadbeater. The works of H. P. Blavatsky are not included in the list of authorities quoted. To have searched the secret doctrine for references to the mental body and the mental plane would, frankly, have been a task beyond the powers of the compiler, and would, also, in all probability have resulted in a volume too abstruse for the class of student for whom this series of books is intended. The debt to H. P. Blavatsky is greater than ever could be indicated by quotations from her monumental volumes. Had she not shown the way in the first instance, later investigators might never have found the trail at all, let alone made it into a path where others may follow with comparative ease and safety. A. E. Powell. Chapter 1 General Description. Before proceeding to describe in detail the mental body of man, its functions, and the part it plays in his life and evolution, it will be useful to give a brief outline of the ground which our study will cover. First, we shall have to consider the mental body as the vehicle through which the self manifests as concrete intellect, in which are developed the powers of the mind, including those of memory and imagination, and which, in the later stages of man's evolution, serves as a separate and distinct vehicle of consciousness, in which the man can live and function quite apart from both his physical and his astral bodies. At the outset, the student must realize quite clearly that in occult psychology the mental equipment of man is divided into two distinct portions: a. The mental body, which deals with particulars, with what are known as concrete thoughts, egg, a particular book, house, triangle, etc. b. The causal body, which deals with principles, with abstract thoughts, egg, books or houses in general, the principle of triangularity common to all triangles. The mental body thus deals with rupa or form thoughts, the causal body with arupa or formless thoughts. A rough analogy may be taken from mathematics. Arithmetic, dealing with particular numbers, belongs to the lower form aspect of mind. Algebra, which deals with symbols representing numbers in general, belongs to the higher or formless aspect of mind. The terms form and formless are, of course, used not in an absolute, but in a relative sense. Thus a cloud or a flame while possessing form are yet formless relatively to, say, a house or a log of wood. Next we shall have to deal with that strange, semi-intelligent, and intensely active life substance known as the mental elemental essence, and the part it plays in helping man to think. The details of the structure and composition of the mental body will next engage our attention, and this will be followed by a description of typical examples of mental bodies of men at various stages of development. A prominent feature in our study will be an examination of karma manas, that association, or entanglement, between desire and thought, in terms of which it would perhaps be possible to write a history, both of the human race as a whole, and of every individual man. So intimate, in fact, is this entanglement that some schools of thought go so far as to class the astral and the mental bodies of man as one vehicle of consciousness, as indeed they are, for practical purposes, for the great majority of mankind. The twofold action of thought in its own world must be described, viz., the radiation of waves of thought, and the formation, and in many cases the projection into space, of thought forms. The effects which these two classes of phenomena produce on their creators and on other men must be examined when we come to deal with thought transference, which, for convenience, we shall consider as unconscious and as conscious, the later division including mental healing, of which a brief outline will be given. It will be necessary to consider the effect which the physical body, and, in fact, physical surroundings in general, produce on the mental body and its workings. Conversely, we must examine the effects which the mental body produces on the physical body and on other physical objects. Then it will be necessary to treat of the astral body in a similar manner, viz., how it influences the mental body, and how the mental body in its turn influences the astral body. Then we shall turn to the mental body itself and show how it operates, how its faculties may be developed and trained both when working through the physical brain, and also when it is operating on its own account as an independent vehicle of consciousness. This naturally leads us to the more deliberate training of the mental body, embracing concentration, that sine qua non of an effective mental life, meditation, and finally, contemplation, leading to mystic consciousness. The use of the mental body during sleep of the physical body will be briefly dealt with, and then a short description of that artificial and temporary mental body known as the Airupa will be added. The life after physical and astral death, that is, on the mental plane itself, will next occupy our attention. This will have to be dealt with at some length, for we have to study the general principles underlying the course of that mental life and many of its details. We must further examine shortly typical examples of life on each of the four lower mental sub-planes, in what the theosophist calls Devachan, the Christian heaven. After proceeding so far, we shall be in a position to have grasped the reality and possibilities of the mental plane regarded as a world in itself, and we shall therefore study it as such a world, examining the nature of the life there, and the general character of its phenomena. Amongst all these we shall find the thought centers, which constitute an interesting and important feature. From these we shall pass to the Akashic records, that wonderful and infallible memory of nature in which everything is remembered and recorded, so that it may be read by anyone possessing the necessary qualifications. A chapter will then be devoted to the inhabitants of the mental plane, and then, as man passes out of the lower mental plane on the death of his mental body, we shall follow him just sufficiently to gain a glimpse of his wider and fuller life on the higher mental, or causal plane. Having thus traced the pilgrimage of the man through physical death, vidi the etheric double, his course through the astral plane, vidi the astral body, and, in this volume, followed him to the threshold of his true home, the causal or higher mental world, we can gain some idea of the relationship between the man in his three lower vehicles, those of the personality, and the true man in his causal body, the soul or individuality. This aspect of our study will be dealt with in the chapter on the personality and the ego. Then we take up the history once again as the man emerges from his home on his descent to rebirth in the lower worlds. Finally, a chapter will be devoted to the life of the man who has reached the stage where he is worthy to be accepted as a kila or disciple by those masters of the wisdom who, as the elder brethren of humanity, serve their younger brothers with such unerring wisdom, such tireless patience, such never-failing and infinite love. For it is today within the reach of many a man who will address himself to the task of making himself worthy, to be trained by them to assist, in however small a measure, in their work for the service of the world, and it is also possible to set out, more or less categorically, the qualifications necessary before that inestimable privilege can be conferred. Chapter 2. Mental Elemental Essence. Before we can study fruitfully the mental body, either as to its composition, structure, or methods of functioning, it is necessary to describe, though in general outline only, what is known as mental elemental essence. The student will recollect that after the formation of the atomic states of matter in each of the planes of nature, the third aspect of the Trinity, the Holy Spirit, the life-giver, in Christian terminology, pours himself down into the sea of virgin matter, the true Virgin Maria, and, by his vitality, awakens the atomic matter to new powers and possibilities, resulting in the formation of the lower subdivisions of each plane. Into matter thus vivified, the second great outpouring of the divine life descends. Again in Christian terminology, the Son is incarnated of the Holy Ghost and the Virgin Mary. This outpouring of the divine life is called by various names at various stages of its descent. Regarded as a whole, it is often spoken of as a monadic essence, more especially when clothed only in atomic matter of the various planes, because it has then become fit to be used to supply permanent atoms to monads. When it ensouls non-atomic, that is, molecular matter, it is called elemental essence, a name borrowed from medieval occultists. It was bestowed by them on the matter of which the bodies of the nature spirits were composed, for they spoke of these as elementals. When on its downward course it energizes the matter of the three higher levels of the mental plane, it is known as the first elemental kingdom. After spending a whole chain period in that evolution, it descends to the four lower levels of the mental plane, and there ensouls the second elemental kingdom for another chain period. Here it is known as mental elemental essence. The next chain period is spent on the astral plane, where it is called the third elemental kingdom, or astral elemental essence. A chain period is the time occupied by the passage of the life wave seven times round the seven globes of a chain. There are thus 49 globe or world periods in each chain period. For further details, see A Textbook of Theosophy by C. W. Liebichter. Each of these three is a kingdom of nature, as varied in manifestations of its different forms of life as are the animal and vegetable kingdoms, with which we are more familiar. Moreover, on each kingdom there are, of course, the usual seven perfectly distinct types or rays of essence, each with its seven subtypes. Both mental and astral elemental essence are intimately connected with man, with his bodies and his evolution, as we shall see more clearly as we proceed with our study of his mental body. It is important to realize that both on the astral and mental planes, elemental essence is quite distinct from the mere matter of those planes. Another point of great importance is that the life animating both mental and astral matter is upon the downward or outward arc of evolution. Progress for it, therefore, means to descend into denser forms of matter, and to learn to express itself through them. For man, evolution is just the opposite of this. He has already sunk deeply into matter, and is now rising out of it towards his source. There is consequently a constant conflict of interests between the man within, and the life inhabiting the matter of his various vehicles. The full bearing of this supremely important fact we shall see more clearly in later chapters, as our subject unfolds. Chapter 3. Composition and Structure. The mental body is built of particles of the four lower subdivisions of the mental world, that is, of mental matter, which corresponds to the four lower subdivisions of astral matter, and to solid, liquid, gaseous and etheric matter of the physical plane. The three higher grades of mental matter are used to build the causal, or higher mental body, with which we are not here concerned. In addition to ordinary mental matter, the mental body contains also mental elemental essence, that is, matter of the second elemental kingdom. The physical body, as we know, is built up of cells, each of which is a tiny separate life animated by the second outpouring, which comes from the second aspect of the deity. The same thing applies in the astral and mental bodies. In the cell life which permeates them there is as yet nothing in the way intelligence, but there is a strong instinct pressing downwards into matter, as we saw in the preceding chapter. The shape of the mental body is ovoid, following that ovoid section of the causal body which alone of its characteristics can manifest in the lower worlds. The matter of the mental body, however, is not evenly distributed throughout the egg. In the midst of the ovoid is the physical body, which strongly attracts astral matter. In its turn the astral matter strongly attracts mental matter. Consequently by far the greater part of the matter of both astral and mental bodies is gathered within the physical frame. To clairvoyant sight, therefore, the mental body appears as built of dense mist, of the shape of the physical body, and surrounded by an ovoid of much finer mist. For this reason, in the mental world an acquaintance is just as recognizable as in the physical world. The portion of the mental body which projects beyond the periphery of the physical body forms the mental aura. The size of both the astral and mental bodies is the same as that of the causal body, or more accurately of the section of the causal body on the lower planes. Thus, unlike the physical body, which has remained substantially the same size since Atlantean days, the mental body grows in size as the man himself develops. The particles of the mental body are in ceaseless motion. Moreover, they are constantly changing, the mental body automatically drawing to itself, from the general storehouse, matter that can maintain the combinations already existing in it. In spite of the intensely rapid motion of the mental particles among themselves, the mental body has yet at the same time a kind of loose organization. There are in it certain striations which divide it more or less irregularly into segments, each of these corresponding to a certain department of the physical brain, so that every type of thought should function through its duly assigned portion. The mental body is yet so imperfectly developed in ordinary men, however, that there are many in whom a great number of special departments are not yet in activity, and any attempt at thought belonging to those departments has to travel round through some inappropriate channel which happens to be fully open. The result is that thought on those subjects is for those people clumsy and uncomprehending. That is why, as we shall see more fully in a later chapter, some people have a head for mathematics and others are unable to perform a simple mathematical process, why some people instinctively understand, appreciate and enjoy music, while others do not know one tune from another. Good thoughts produce vibrations of the finer matter of the body, which by its specific gravity tends to float in the upper part of the ovoid, whereas bad thoughts, such as selfishness and avarice, are always oscillations of the grosser matter, which tends to gravitate towards the lower part of the ovoid. Consequently, the ordinary man who yields himself not infrequently to selfish thoughts of various kinds, usually expands the lower part of his mental body, and presents roughly the appearance of an egg with its larger end downwards. The man who has not indulged in those lower thoughts, but has devoted himself to higher ones, tends to expand the upper part of his mental body and therefore presents the appearance of an egg standing in its smaller end. All such appearances, however, are only temporary, the tendency being for the symmetry of the ovoid to reassert itself by degrees. From a study of the colors and striations of a man's mental body, the clairvoyant can perceive his character and the progress he has made in his present life. From similar features of the causal body he can see what progress the ego has made since its original formation when the man left the animal kingdom. The mental body is more or less refined in its constituents, according to the stage of intellectual development at which the man has arrived. It is an object of great beauty, and delicacy and rapid motion of its particles giving it an aspect of living iridescent light, and this beauty becomes an extraordinary, radiant and entrancing loveliness as the intellect becomes more highly evolved and is employed chiefly on pure and sublime topics. As we shall see in detail later, every thought gives rise to vibrations in the mental body, accompanied by a play of color described as like that of the spray of a waterfall as the sunlight strikes it, raised many degrees in color and vivid delicacy. Every mental body has a single molecule or unit, usually called the mental unit, of the fourth mental subplane, which remains with the man during the whole of his incarnations. As we shall see in the course of our study, the materials of the mental body are scattered and regathered again and again, in life after life, but the mental unit remains a stable center the whole time. The mental unit may be regarded as the heart and center of the mental body, and upon the relative activity of the different parts of that unit, the appearance of that body as a whole to a great extent depends. The mental unit may, of course, belong to any one of the seven great types or rays of matter. It should be noted that all the permanent atoms and the mental unit of a man belong to the same type or ray. The mental unit thus corresponds, in the mental body, to the permanent atoms in the causal, astral, and etheric bodies. The use of the permanent atoms, and of the mental unit, is to preserve within themselves, as vibrating powers, the results of all the experiences through which the bodies with which they have been associated have passed. The various activities of the mind fall naturally into certain classes or divisions, and these divisions are expressed through different parts of the mental unit. Mental units are by no means all the same. They differ greatly, according to the type, and to the development of their owners. If a mental unit lay at rest, the force radiating from it would make a number of funnels in the mental body, just as the light shining through the slide in a magic lantern makes a large radiating funnel of light in the air between the lantern and the sheet. In this case, the surface of the mental body may be likened to the sheet, because it is only at the surface that the effect becomes visible to one who is looking at the mental body from the outside, so that, if the mental unit were at rest, there would be seen on the surface of the mental body a number of pictures in color, representing the various types of thought common to the person, with, presumably, dark spaces between them. But the mental unit, like all other chemical combinations, is rotating rapidly on its axis, and the effect of this is that in the mental body there is a series of bands, not always quite clearly defined, nor always of the same width, but still readily distinguishable, and usually in about the same relative positions. The student will by now be familiar with colors and their meaning, a full list being given, which is not considered necessary to repeat here, in the astral body pp.11-12. Where aspirational thought exists, it invariably shows itself in a beautiful little violet circle at the top of the ovoid of the mental body. As the aspirant draws near to the gateway of the path, this circle increases in size and radiancy, and in the initiate it is a splendid glowing cap of the most lovely color imaginable. Below it often comes the blue ring of devotional thought, usually rather a narrow one, except in the case of the few whose religion is really deep and genuine. Next to that, there may be the much broader zone of affectionate thought, which may be of any shade of crimson or rose color according to the type of affection which it indicates. Near to the zone of affection, and frequently closely connected with it, there is found the orange band, which expresses proud and ambitious thought. Again, in intimate relation with pride comes the yellow belt of intellect, commonly divided into two bands, denoting respectively the philosophical and the scientific types of thought. The place of this yellow color varies much in different men. Sometimes it fills the whole upper part of the egg, rising above devotion and affection, and in such a case pride is generally excessive. Below the group just described, and occupying the middle section of the ovoid, is the broad belt devoted to concrete shapes, the part of the mental body from which all ordinary thought forms issue. These are thought forms will be described in Chapter 8. The principal color here is green, shaded often with brown or yellow, according to the disposition of the person. There is no part of the mental body which varies more widely than this. Some people have their mental bodies crowded with a vast number of concrete images, whereas others have only a few. In some they are clear and well outlined, in others they are vague and hazy to the last degree, In some they are classified, labeled and arranged in the most orderly fashion, in others they are not arranged at all, but are left in hopeless confusion. In the lower part of the ovoid come the belts expressing all kinds of undesirable thoughts. A kind of muddy precipitate of selfishness often fills the lower third, or even half, of the mental body, and above this is sometimes a ring portraying hatred, cunning or fear. Naturally, as a man develops, this lower part vanishes, the upper part gradually expanding until it fills the whole body, as shown in the illustrations in Man Visible and Invisible, by Bishop Leadbeater. The general rule is, the stronger the thought the larger the vibration, the more spiritual and unselfish the thought, the higher and more rapid is the vibration. Strength of thought produces brilliancy, spirituality produces delicacy of color. In a later chapter, we shall describe a few typical mental bodies, and indicate how various other mental qualities show themselves. Chapter 4 Functions. The mental body is the vehicle through which the self manifests and expresses itself as the concrete intellect. The mind is the reflection of the cognitional aspect of the self as knower. The mind is the self working in the mental body. The majority of people are unable to separate the man from the mind, consequently, to them the self, which they are seeking, is the mind. This is the more natural, if not inevitable, because at the present stage of evolution men of the fifth race are working especially at the development of the mental body. In the past the physical body has been vivified as a vehicle of consciousness. The astral body is also at least partially vivified by most men. The vivification of the mental body is the work upon which humanity should now be more especially engaged. The development of the astral body, with its function of expressing karma, or emotion, was the special work of the fourth root race, the Atlantean, as it is the special work of the fourth sub-race of the fifth root race, the Celtic. As stated above, the quality which the fifth race, and this applies both to the fifth root race and the fifth sub-race, is intended specially to develop his manas or mind, that type of intellect that discriminates, that notes the differences between things. At the present stage of half-development most men look for differences from their own point of view, not in order to understand so much as to resist them, even violently to oppose them. When the faculty is perfectly developed, however, differences will be noted calmly, solely for the purpose of understanding them and judging what is best. We may go further and say that at the present stage of development of the fifth sub-race, weakness in others is a field to exploit, a thing to enslave, something to trample underfoot, in order to rise on it rather than to help it to exist for itself. Nevertheless, unpleasant as it may be in its earlier stages, this mental development is essential, for the true critical spirit is absolutely necessary for true progress. The sixth root race, as well as the sixth sub-race of the fifth root race, will be occupied principally with the development of spirituality, synthesis, compassion, and eagerness to serve being strongly marked characteristics. The stage of development of mind and emotion in the human race at the present time, however, calls for a little further explanation. The present or fourth round is primarily intended for the development of desire or emotion, the fifth round is intended for the unfolding of intellect. Owing however to the stimulus provided by the Lords of the Flame, the intellect has already considerably developed a whole round in advance of what we may call the normal program. At the same time it should be understood that the intellect of which man is today so proud is infinitesimal compared with that which the average man will possess at the culminating point of the next or fifth round. The Lords of Flame came from the planet Venus to this Earth during the third root race, and at once took charge of our evolution. Their leader is called in Indian books Sanat Kumara, with him came three lieutenants, and some 25 other adepts as assistants. About 100 ordinary human beings were also brought over from Venus and merged into the ordinary humanity of the Earth. It is these great ones who are spoken of in the secret doctrine as projecting a spark into the mindless men and awakening the intellect within them. Their action was really rather more in the nature of a magnetic stimulus, their influence drawing humanity towards themselves, and enabling men to develop the latent spark and to become individualized.